You're listening to Drinking on the Job, DOTJ. I'm your host, John Coyle. Drinking on the Job is a toast to the culture of food, wine, and all things fermented. We'll be talking with winemakers, musicians, artists, late-night bartenders, scoundrels, and more. It's time to grab a glass before it's last call. Guinness is history. A brewery with a long legacy that many people don't know. It's my favorite pint by far. So sit back, grab a Guinness, and get ready to be inspired. On December 31st, 1759, Arthur Guinness signed a 9,000-year lease on St. James Gate Brewery in Dublin. If that's not belief, I don't know what is. And now we can see that his belief was a vision. A vision he saw before any of us were even born. His entrepreneurial spirit was on another level. By 1860s, Guinness Stout was available all over the world, and it was a completely different world. In the 1890s, a fearless group of men chose to set sail around the world to report back on the standard of Guinness. From South Africa to Australia, China, and Brazil, they literally risked their lives traveling the world by steamship, enduring deadly seas to ensure that Guinness was being shipped, stored, and served in quality conditions. In the 1800s, the Guinness family contributed to the restoration of St. Patrick's Cathedral in Dublin. St. Stephen's Green, a private green reserved for the city's wealthiest residents, was purchased by Arthur Edward Guinness and donated to the city so the green space could be enjoyed by everyone within the area. The Guinness Trust in London and the Iva Trust in Dublin was established in 1890 by Edward Cecil Guinness, 1st Lord Iva, to help underprivileged communities living in the inner city. In Dublin, Guinness supported families through the construction of well-built flats, a hostel, an indoor clothes and food market, as well as a play center. A level of employee welfare was also pioneered by Guinness. The brewery paid in general 10% higher than the average industrial wage in Dublin at the time, and in 1870, a medical center was established to provide free healthcare, not just to employees, but to their families. Guinness began to introduce employee benefits such as paid annual holidays, free meals, and of course, a beer allowance. And then in the 1880s, introduced a pension plan for his employees. He understood the value of supporting the community around him, and it still remains a big focus in Guinness today. From initiatives such as Water of Life, providing safe drinking water to people across the continent of Africa, Arthur's legacy of philanthropic tradition still lives and breathes within the walls of St. James Gate and beyond, and will for many, many more years to come. Every man has a dream. One of my dreams has always been to talk with somebody, an ambassador from Guinness. It is sometimes my lifeblood. It is my favorite pint by far. Zach Berger joins me today. He's the ambassador for Guinness Brewery. We're going to talk a bit of history. We're going to talk about what this brand is about and his dream job. Zach, thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. You know, we front-loaded the podcast with some history, so we didn't have to go on the deep, deep dive. But in the history, we talk about how Arthur Guinness signed a 9,000-year lease, which is so insane to think about. And the only thing I could compare it to was the Japanese businesses who were built on 100 years and 1,000-year models. Yeah. And it's strange that there's a coincidence in that they're both island countries. Mm-hmm. And they're so deeply involved with the community. And when you do the dive on all these Japanese businesses that have lived this long, one of the focal points is they take care of their community and the people around them. And that's what gave them this incredible longevity, which is what I didn't know going in. I got to be honest. I read the story and I was just kind of wowed. And that's why I had to front load, because I want people to hear the history. But more importantly, I want to talk to you and how you got here, what you do. And you can spill the Guinness a little bit here.
Yeah, I'll spill the beans a little bit. Yeah, so It's so much fun talking about the history of Guinness, especially because there's so much of it.
Yeah.
And I think we as brand ambassadors often find ourselves in a place where, okay, how much time do I have to be able to talk to you about this thing? And this 9,000-year lease is such an iconic part of the brand. It is still an active lease. It's still a part of the brand.
It's
yes,
crazy.
It's not just this document that is a part of our foundation, but we still pay the rent. At this point, yes, we own yeah, the facility
right,
now.
Yeah.
It's all ours.
That's
but
pretty funny.
It equates to about £1 million a year that is donated to charity,
mm-hmm,
right, throughout, especially to Irish charities. Arthur Guinness and his family, as you move through the history of the brand, were so committed to giving back to not only the community, but to their employees.
Mm.
You know, there was this phrase, turn of the century, 1800s, where it was, find yourself a Guinness man. And forgive the phrase, but the idea was if you were married to someone or if you were someone who worked at Guinness, then you had kind of a little bit of a better life. You know,
right.
By 1850, we were the largest brewery in the world. And so we were able to provide these things like paid time off,
yeah,
for employees. Employees still got their free lunch every day. And still to this day, if you're a pensioner, you can still go back to the brewery and get that lunch for free, right?
It blows me away. I built a medical center. And I mentioned this at the beginning. And I was reading this. It was just like, why do you think this guy was such a visionary? I mean, this is like, has it been an entrepreneur with this kind of like foresight? Like, it's almost like Nostradamus kind of shit.
Yeah. Right? You know, and I think the 9,000-year lease, so if you look at the history of leases in Ireland, they are these astronomically long leases,
mm-hmm,
most often in, sort of a multiple of three.
Mm-hmm.
And so 9,000 definitely falls within that realm. But the reason they would sign such a long lease is because at the time, most Irish were not allowed to own property. So at the time, if I were to, say, get a lease from you and we signed it for the lease of Zach Berger's life— once I passed away, the lease does not get turned over to my children. It goes back to you. It goes back to the person who owns the lease.
Okay.
And so what the Irish started doing was signing these really, really long leases, right? And the reason he chose St. James Gate and chose that location is because of its proximity to the River Liffey, right? And that is not for use of water. We are definitely not using public water for
right,
our beer, but it's about shipping. So he definitely knew down the line that he would want to be able to distribute the beer through shipping through the British Empire to be able to make sure that everybody someday around the world would be able to get their hands on this beautiful pint.
Wow. So I'd like you to describe to me in your words what a perfect Guinness looks and tastes
Man.
Like. And then I got to talk about the recipe a little bit.
I love that.
Okay.
So,
okay.
You know, there's continually a conversation about, I think the most common question I get is, where do I get the best pint, right?
Sure.
You know, and are the pints different here versus Ireland? And I love this conversation because I think a beautiful pint with a beautiful dispense system, so everybody has their own draft systems that they take care of their own way, but a clean draft system that is balanced with the right pressure, right, the right PSI,
sure,
the right temperatures, all of those things, all of those nuances are required in order to pour a beautiful pint.
Right.
And especially in the United States, we're blessed that we get all of our product. All the Irish beers come from Dublin, come from St. James Gate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you took the very best draft system in the United States against the very best draft system in Ireland, it's going to be the same experience, right? It's going to be the same pint. I think after that, when you have a beautiful pint, is about the moment, the room, who you're with, the
yeah,
community. So what I'm looking for in a beautiful pint, obviously we want the temperature. So it should be between 38 and 43 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I like mine at 42.5. And I'm only saying this because
wow,
I've shoved my thermometer into enough pints in my day.
I just say you went 0.5 on me. Go ahead.
Yeah, you
yeah,
have to.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I think when you really dive into tasting so many pints when you're doing quality checks, because quality is such a huge
sure,
investment for our brand since the foundation,
yeah,
that you really learn what kind of pint you like. And we're starting to be able to really discover how long has it been since someone's cleaned their beer lines?
Yeah.
You know, beer lines should be cleaned every 2 weeks. You know, and if somebody says, oh, I let my lines go for a month, well, you're going to have
yeah,
some issues there at the end. And that's not Guinness. That's science,
yeah,
right?
I have to give a shout out to Damien and Marcella at Monk's because Damien built his bar. And I asked him this, what's the secret? And he said, a shorter line. Lots of pubs will run a too long of a line and then it doesn't get cleaned properly.
Right.
If it's a shorter line from tap to keg, easier to maintain. And Monk's is one of my favorite. Dead Rabbit's one of my favorite. You know,
yeah,
like you have places you love.
There's a lot of really great locations, especially in New York City. We're blessed with so many beautiful pints
mm-hmm,
here. But again, a lot of them have the same beautiful pint. But what it comes down to is, who are you there with? What is the community around
yeah,
this
totally,
pint? And that's something so significant about a lot of brands, but that's something, there is something about kind of coming home a little bit when everyone's able to have a pint and raise a glass.
I think pubs are more important now than they used to be, in that anytime I go out to dinner, I'm out a lot, you're out a lot, entertaining. So many people are stuck in their cell phone, mm-hmm. doom scrolling and not connecting. And at least in pubs, I still see people talking over a pint. And I hope it doesn't go away, because it feels like it's on the wane for sure. But
yeah, you know, the idea of sitting down and having a conversation over a pint is something that must always be maintained. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of a legacy, I think, of pub goers since the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. of being able to just sit down and have just reflect on the day, the week, the month, whatever it may be, over a pint, and being able to tell stories is so crucial. Mm-hmm. And when you're with your friends and when it's a good story and it's a beautiful pint, what more could you ask for?
It's actually at the beginning. I mean, our country, the Declaration of Independence was signed in a tavern. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the Mayflower was stocked with beer. Mm-hmm. I mean, that beverage is a part of our life, but Guinness is very special. And this is what I want to talk about. Okay. Let's talk about this recipe. If somebody doesn't have Guinness, they always say, well, no, we have this stout and we have that stout. But there's no replicating Guinness. Have there ever been like copyright infringements? Is it such a well-kept secret? Because let's go in on that a little bit, because it is so unique.
Yeah. So I think you start off with saying that most beers are made the same way, right? You've got your grain, you've got your yeast, you've got your water, and you've got your hops. And that's the same for us as it is for anyone else. I think mm-hmm. where Guinness is able to really separate themselves is, yes, there's the roasting of the barley, the roasting of the grains that really allows for the color, but also that beautiful flavor and the aromas that'll come with it. But the big flavor driver there is the yeast.
Right.
This is a yeast that is unique and significant only to St. James Gate. When we're talking about especially like Guinness Draft, that's a yeast you can't find anywhere else. So when somebody down the street they have the same process, mm-hmm. and it's exactly the same, it's the same 283 quality checks that we do, but they don't have the same yeast, it's going to come out different. Hmm. It's going to be a different experience.
So is there a significant difference that you could tell it's not our yeast? Because the only reason why I ask is because I've never tasted anything that tastes close to Guinness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you know, and yeah, I think that's, you can definitely tell when you're tasting, there are a lot of really great nitrogenated stouts out there, a lot of really, really great beers. Some of them are lower ABV than we are. We're 4.2. Some of them are a little bit higher or much higher as well.
Yeah.
But that's an entirely different experience. And so that on itself, just on an alcohol by volume content, is going to change the experience. It's going to change the mouthfeel. It's going to change the aromas.
Right.
It's going to change the entire experience that you're having with your pint. But also that yeast and that fermentation provides so much flavor and so much unique, beautiful textures that you're just not going to find anywhere else. Everybody has yeast, right?
Sure.
Everybody has brewer's yeast. Everybody has a yeast that is significant to them. But I think that's how you distinguish between all of the great beers in the world, is because they all use different yeast, and there's all a little bit of a different system there.
And you can buy commercial yeast to impart flavors like banana. A lot of IPAs use them, things like that.
Sure.
But this yeast that you're talking about is a very specific yeast. It's probably been it's the mother yeast that's probably been protected and stored and could be part of the same yeast original.
Yeah, I think what we say is that the yeast has been around for, our yeast has been around for over 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you look at that, that's at the, over 100 years ago is when yeast was discovered as an actual thing, right?
Yeah.
And you could make the argument that that yeast that was in the warehouses beforehand, that was in the breweries beforehand, could be the same.
Mm-hmm.
What I can touch to is we have beers in market like the Guinness Extra Stout and the Guinness Foreign Extra Stout,
right,
which are using the same yeast, but those are recipes from, for Foreign Extra Stout, it's 1801, and Extra Stout is 1821. And it's all the same yeast, it's just the brewing is a little bit different.
Right.
So we are able to trace that lineage back beyond the discovery of yeast. Do I want to say that the yeast from 1759 is the same as we're using today? I can't tell you. Tell you that for sure. But what I can say is that the commitment to quality and the commitment to excellence and being able to – we have such an incredible archive team, and be able to keep records, which has been a huge part of the brand. We can definitely say that the flavor profile of what we're experiencing today is probably pretty close to what people were experiencing when we started making stouts.
It's pretty crazy. And so there are some secrets that are still kept in the nuclear codes somewhere, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to say this is where the yeast is kept, but there's obviously a yeast that's kept on St. James Gate. Of course there is. And then there's definitely warehouses in a hidden location somewhere.
It's a bunker.
You gotta protect it, right? We want to protect the secret. But again, something that makes us iconic is that flavor profile, and that's something that we have to keep close to our chest.
Yeah, well, there's absolutely nothing like it. I think we're going to try a zero Guinness that you brought for us to try, which
Man, I love this beer so much. Wow. So this is Guinness Zero. It's our non-alcoholic offering. It's such a fabulous product. It's made from Guinness draft, and then what we do is we essentially through a proprietary filtration system and a little bit of cooking, cook out all of the alcohol. And then there's a little bit of hop that's added to it just for shelf stability purposes. So when people say, oh, this doesn't taste exactly like draft. Well, it's not supposed to. Right. This is our non-alcoholic offering. If you can tell the difference, great. If you can't tell the difference, great.
I told you this coming in, but me and a couple of my Irish buddies were at Monk's last St. Pat's Day, mm-hmm. and we ordered as a joke, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. to be serious. Mm-hmm. So we ordered zero Guinness. And we all sat there and our eyes went wide and we're like, wow. Like, you have to drink a lot of Guinness to recognize that it's zero.
It's really
brilliant. Special. It's beautiful. And I think, as I was telling Damien, and, you know, it's if you're at a sports bar or something and you can put one of these in between each real one, you wake up, you're not hungover. And that's what this is about, is finding your balance that we've been talking about, because we're both in the alcohol industry. And that's why this stuff is blown up. And in Ireland too, I imagine, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in Ireland, we're starting to see Guinness Zero on draft in some locations, which we're very excited about. It's not a global thing yet, but, you know, we'll keep our fingers crossed. We have such an incredible innovations team and quality team over at St. James Gate that they're just coming up with some of the best stuff ever. And having something like Guinness Zero is a beautiful way to support the brand and support it responsibly. You know, we want to make sure that everyone is able to enjoy their pint, but also be able to enjoy a pint again another day, you know, and being able to have the longevity of that instead of having to, you know, take a step into a world that doesn't make you very happy the next morning.
Sure. So we got to talk about how you got here, because where did you start? I know you were brand ambassador for a couple of before, but did you ever think you would land here? And like, we got to talk about how you got to Guinness.
Oh man. Yeah. It's been quite the ride. So I started off in the on-premise. I was started off as a server and kind of worked my way up. I moved to New York, just over 13 years ago now. And, you know, I got a job at a restaurant because that's what I was doing coming out of college. And I wanted to be an actor and I wanted to just be up on the stage and I wanted to do, you know, the big famous thing. And I found myself very quickly falling in love with these incredible people that I worked with every day in hospitality. And then being able to eventually step behind the bar and, oh my goodness, the amount of offerings and spirits and flavors and textures and aromas and experiences that you can dive into is far beyond anything that I ever even knew existed. And then realizing that I will learn something new every day. Every single day, there's going to be a new fact, a new download, something that happens that really drives me forward. So I was a bartender. I got to run some of my own programs, and I've worked in everything from fried chicken to Michelin stars to cocktail bars to everything in between. Mm-hmm. And I was very lucky to have met someone from a spirits company who was the CEO of the spirits company and said, I tried to sell him one of his whiskeys from his portfolio.
Wow.
And he said,
did you know it was him?
I had no idea who it was. No idea who it was. And he said, you know, we should talk about you being a brand ambassador. And I was like, I hadn't even considered this a thing. Like, I had met brand ambassadors and sales reps and things running the bar, but I never really thought that that was something I wanted to do. And fast forward 9 months later, I'm working as a representative of this luxury Scottish whiskey and having just, oh my goodness, what an education and what another group of people that are just so extraordinary and so unique. And that was definitely a growth period for me. I learned a lot about myself, about how to manage this. I will fully say being a brand ambassador is not for everyone. You know, there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes. And I think when someone says to me, oh, it just seems like you're out all the time, and it just seems like all you're doing is having just a ton of fun. Well, then I'm really doing my job the right way, because as long as it's responsible, but there's so much that happens behind the scenes. And learning how to manage that was so exciting for me and so much fun. And I got some really great mentors in the industry that had been in the industry that were kind of the first national brand ambassadors for all sorts of spirits.
Yeah. You basically are holding the baton at an event, keeping tempo and making sure everything runs right. And from the outside, it looks like, you know, I'm, you know, T. Edward Wines, you know, as sales director and sell wine and spirits. And people are like, man, I love your job. It's so easy. You just drink good wine. I'm like, no, man, it's like going to a magic show, right?
Yeah.
It's like there's a lot of stuff that happens behind and preparation to create this environment, this seamless environment where it's just you're imparting incredible knowledge. They feel like they've learned something and they get to impart and imbibe great beverages.
Yeah.
It's an art form.
Events are fun because you're building a community in the moment.
Right.
And so to be able to get an entire room of, say, 30 people to build a rapport with each other in 5 minutes over a pint takes some planning and takes some preparation and takes some work. And when you see these things come to life, there is no greater reward for a brand ambassador to be able to see this group of people that never thought they would ever meet each other to be able to bond around this serve. And I found myself several years later, after having worked for a couple of different brands, I applied to Guinness because I was like, this sounds like the coolest thing ever. Not expecting a response, not expecting anything.
So do you go to the Dublin office for that, or did you go stay local?
So the application was just online, and then it was a local interview, and I got to meet the local teams, and the next thing I know, they offered me the job, and I was like, I really don't know what I've just gotten myself into here. Like, this is...
Yeah.
For me, Guinness has always sort of been the holy grail. You know, working for a Scottish brand previously and some American brands, I always loved and enjoyed, but there was never really a connection to home for me.
Right.
And I have I was actually just over in Dublin in August, and I got to sit down at the Epic Museum and sit down with a genealogist. And my Irish heritage goes back. It goes really far back. And I've always known that I was Irish. It's always been a part of my family. My middle name is Reardon. Like, it's a part of me for sure. Mm-hmm. But really learning about family and seeing that there is, as I said earlier, a sort of a coming home with this brand, and being able to represent a brand that I know was around when my 3 times great-grandfather was moving to the United States. It was a part... He knew about it.
Yeah.
And this was a part of him. And then being able to represent such an iconic brand at the level that we are executing today is such a gift.
Yeah, it's got to be a dream come true. They ask you a ton of questions. What was the vetting process like? Because this brand is very particular.
Yeah.
Because of this unique history, longevity, but also, and we'll talk about this, not everybody just gets to pour Guinness. You don't call Zach. Hey, you know, I'm opening a bar. I want Guinness. Like, oh, really? Okay,
great.
Yeah, people in hell want ice water too, friend. so, what was the vetting process like for you? Mm-hmm. And then, what do you do when you're in the market to vet people? What is some of your kind of standards that you have to have?
Yeah, I think the first thing that you look at when you're looking at any brand advocate is how do they interact with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, knowledge, education. Whether it's beer, whiskey, wine, whatever it may be, the facts of the brand are things that you can teach. But it's how do you convey that message? How do you represent the brand responsibly?
Sure.
And that's what I so loved about the interview process with Guinness was a lot of it was, can you hang? And it's that, and that's really, do we all get along? Do we appreciate, do I want to talk to you about this brand? Do people want to talk to me about this brand?
Sure.
And do they feel safe and comfortable, and do I feel approachable enough? Are always the things that I'm looking at when I'm talking about advocates is somebody who represents a brand, but they seem inaccessible. It's a tough thing for a consumer to be able to want to learn and want to be a part of that community. Our job is to be the physical embodiment of the marketing and then to provide access to the brand. And do I seem accessible?
Right. I have to tell you, I think being in this business for almost 30 years myself, you can see people who are on rote and they're on automatic pilot.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad. It's like talking to a robot. They're just, you know, going through their day, man. Mm-hmm. And I think the people that do know you and just people listening to you now, they're already like, man, this guy's passionate about his job.
Thank you.
And it's really happy to hear. What does your day-to-day look like?
Oh, man, I wish I could give you an answer there. It's different every day, which is one of my favorite things about this job. So I can give you sort of like the past month or so where there were definitely staff trainings. I spent a lot of time in bars with bartenders and with servers showing them, yes, how to pour a beautiful pint, but to take pride in a beautiful pint, right? As I said earlier, the most common question we get is is where can I find the best pint, right?
Sure. So, all the time.
And talking to bartenders, and you'll meet bartenders that take such a great pride in their pint. And, you know, I sit down at a pub and somebody will say, oh, you're the Guinness guy, no pressure on me. And I'm sitting there going, dude, just pour the best pint you can, like just like you would anyone else.
Yeah.
And I'm going to love it. I'm going to enjoy this experience. If there are things that we need to fix from a quality perspective, we will have that conversation, which is fine. We only want it to be better. Nobody's trying to pull the rug out from underneath you.
Right.
And being able to drive that forward is a huge part of my job. So giving bartenders access, Guinness is, once you know how to do it, a really accessible way to pour a beer. Mm-hmm. If you don't know how to do it, it seems intimidating and it seems pretty tough. So giving them that access. But I've also spent some time in other parts of the U.S., we've done a food shoot. We just did this really great barbecue food shoot in Texas where we had all sorts of different pints and extra stouts and foreign extra stouts and zero with different barbecue pairings and seafood pairings, which is great. And so my responsibility there is making sure that the product looks great on camera.
Sure.
And make sure that we have to pour pints. When you look at any of our advertising, any of our media, that's an actual pint that's actually been poured.
It looks beautiful too.
Yeah.
You see them. It's on the website. And anytime I posted some stuff and I was just like, wow, it looks absolutely fantastic. So what is your favorite combination? Like because we're going to ask you what you're going to eat and drink at the end of your life. But what is your favorite food combination with Guinness?
Oh,
if you could pick
boy.
One or two. Like barbecue would seem right to me.
Barbecue is a good one for sure. I think the beautiful thing about our portfolio is the versatility of the portfolio. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at the stouts, you have Guinness Draft, which is the nitrogenated version that everybody knows and loves. Mm-hmm. We've got the extra stout, the foreign extra stout, but we've also got Harp and Smittix as a part of our portfolio as well, which makes, we can pair it with any food. You know,
gotcha.
If stout isn't for you, then we have other beers, we have other offerings. I love it when someone says, well, you know, Guinness Draft isn't really for me. I'm an IPA drinker. And I say, well, then you need to look at our foreign extra stout. It's a little bit bigger. It's a little bit more full-bodied.
Sure.
It's a 7.5. It's accessible there. For me, I've got two answers here.
Okay.
The first one is the sort of easygoing, fun one. I love doing like a pint of Guinness and just really good like Cajun chicken sandwiches, like grilled Cajun chicken sandwich.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Just a lot of food, a lot of spice, a lot of flavor. You've got so much flavor coming from Guinness already and you need something to kind of either go with it or counter it. And I love Cajun spices. I love barbecue. I love Caribbean food. I love citrus and heat and flavor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I think those work really well together. On the other side of it, on the sort of cleaner, more, my friends are going to laugh, more bougie side of it is I think caviar goes incredibly well. So oysters, caviar,
big oysters.
Sushi, uni, things like that,
okay.
Sea urchin. I think those work beautifully with the palate. But a lot of those are counter pairings because you've got super salinity on one side.
Right.
And then you've got the rich, creamy, malty flavors that come from a Guinness Draft. But the two together is just, oh my God, it's just one of my favorites.
I could see that. I love Guinness and oysters. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So tell me, like, what is you get a common request for Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
So there's standards that you have,
mm-hmm.
right? So what are some of the things you like, I'm sorry, we can't cross that line.
You're talking about from a pint perspective?
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm sure you get petitioned all day long to do Guinness, right?
Yeah.
So what do you have to say? I'm sorry, I can't do this because of our standard, really.
You know, I think the first thing that we focus on is glassware.
Mm-hmm.
Glassware is a huge part of it. You know,
sure.
We want it to be in a tulip or a no-nick glass. Tulips are obviously the way to go. We have Gravity glasses, which is the branded glassware that everybody has definitely seen. Keeping that and keeping the branding there in mind is super important. And I think after that, it's about responsibility. It's about how do we want to showcase the brand in a positive light. You know, we work in the alcohol industry, and there's a lot of directions in which alcohol can go.
Sure.
And we want to make sure that the first thing that everybody is focused on is health and being able to take care of yourself and being able to enjoy the brand as responsible as possible, which is why we're drinking Guinness Zero today, right?
Sure.
And I think those are the things that we want to focus on. Any sort of branding that may stray away from that, stray into the realm of irresponsible consumption, isn't the environment that we want to be in,
mm-hmm.
know, because I think first and foremost, we're working so hard to cultivate an experience for everyone that is able to enjoy the brand. And I want you to remember that experience. I want you to be able to, you know, next week go, man, I had such a great time over pints.
Right.
Or I was at, you know, I was at this Guinness party for New Year's Eve. And, you know, I always thought New Year's Eve was just for champagne, but, oh man, I really liked nitro beer at midnight, you know, and that was a lot of fun for me too. And that's the environment that we
want to cultivate. The nitro in the can is very cool too.
The nitro in the can is so cool. The technology is incredible, and it makes it even more accessible.
Mm-hmm. So the brand itself, you don't see a ton of advertising, mm-hmm. right? Which I think is great. It's more done by events. You don't see tons of ads, mm-hmm. Done purposely, no doubt.
Yeah.
Or purposefully. Yeah. I recently saw that you're at Kokodok.
Uh-huh.
So like that's the hottest restaurant in New York City right now. You can't get in unless you know Zach. but is that also like you want to be in like Michelin star restaurants as a part of a tasting menu? I mean, a Guinness pairing on a tasting menu, I think is brilliant.
Yeah.
But is that something you're like, yeah, we would like to be in that space as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the brand is moving in the direction of more premiumization. I don't want to leave the Irish pub at all. I think that's our home. That's sure. our foundation. And we love the Irish pub. And mm-hmm. we always want to be in that environment.
Sure.
Of course we do.
Mm-hmm.
But Guinness is a premium offering. It is so high quality.
Exactly.
We spend so much time, energy, money. And there's so much legacy behind it that it is cultivated in the same way that any other sort of high-end item is being built.
I look at it as a historical luxury brand.
Yes.
I really do. It's just like I know it's in my local bar that I love.
Mm-hmm.
But it's on a par with some of my favorite champagnes that I drink. So,
perfect example. You know, and I use that all the time, which is, you know, champagne, absolutely, with the exception of one Robert Mondavi, has to be from France, right? Has to be from Champagne specifically.
Yeah.
And I think there is an interesting conversation I just had recently about, you know, think of Guinness not as this only Irish thing. Mm. You know, I don't want anyone to think, well, I'm not Irish, therefore I can't have this. Think of it as a premium, or if, dare we say, luxury item from Ireland.
Right.
Right? There are so many – the agriculture in Ireland is so extraordinary, and there's so many high-end, wonderful products that come out of that country, and Guinness belongs there. But it also works in a level of when you're stepping into a place like Kokodok, where the bartenders are so very well trained, we can train them once how to pour an utterly perfect pint, and now they care about it just as much as presenting the food the right way, presenting the cocktails the right way.
Right.
It is the same level of nuance. It's the same level of multi-stepped process, and it fits right into their wheelhouse. So yes, we love the Irish pub, but yeah, cocktail bars, I know that the industry already loves our brand. We know
sure,
that bartenders have huge affinity for it, but consumers do too. And why not make it available everywhere? Because I think we all agree that a beautiful pint is stunning and it's more than just the sizzling fajita at Fridays,
yeah.
which is great,
sure,
but people see it and people know it. And we've seen this time and time again. We'll go into a bar where there won't be any Guinness on the bar, and then one person will order a pint that is stunning, and then they just start showing up. More and more pints just kind of start coming out of the bar, and we're having a lot of fun with it.
So what is the biggest secret to pouring a great pint? What should somebody be looking for? I'm one like I will be sitting at a bar sometimes and people go, geez, where's my pint? And this person has no patience. They don't realize what is actually going on. Mm-hmm. So explain what is going on and what a perfect pint pour would entail.
Yeah, the biggest secret is that it is patience. Mm-hmm. It's understanding that it takes 119.5 seconds to pour a beautiful pint.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
But it's also then about not taking too long, right? We have to make sure that with that three-quarter pour, so you're pouring the pint three-quarters of the way, you have to let it rest.
Mm, yeah, exactly.
You have to let it rest. You have to let it do its thing. All that nitrogen needs to find a home within your pint, and that is what that beautiful creamy head is. You need to allow for that to take place. After that, once that's settled, it's about topping off that pint and getting that beautiful dome.
Yes.
And the dome is really, it's so iconic. It's so unique. And I would challenge anyone to come up with another brand that has such a link to a national heritage just from the top of the picture of the pint, right?
And, that's a good point.
You know, and it's an iconic, and such a unique thing. And there is something about that just makes you smile. But also what that allows for you to do is it allows for you to get under the head a little bit, right? All head on all beer is bitter. And you need the sweetness of the body. Yes, we're talking about dry Irish stout. Mm. But you need the sweetness of the body to be paired with the bitterness of the head for that consistent experience.
That textural thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And when you have that dome, you've got enough of the head in the beer so that you have the consistent experience all the way through the pint.
Right.
Right?
That was elegant. I'm so eloquent.
Thank you. I love it, man. There's nothing more fun than being able to enjoy a beautiful pint.
Yeah, I agree. And you are right. It's the community. It's the sharing. It's the spirit of it all that what my favorite things about getting together with people to have a pint.
Yeah.
Because we're going to talk about life and laugh and all that kind of cool stuff.
Exactly.
So we are at the part of the show where God looks down and he says, Zach, oh my God, you've extended the legacy of Guinness. You've brought more joy and happiness, poured more pints, made more people laugh and have an incredible time. So I'm going to give you the gift. I'm going to let you know your last day on the planet. So what are you going to eat? What are you going to drink? And what piece of music would you be listening to as you float off into the ethers?
I love that. The music one is caught me off guard. I love that.
The music
I love
does.
That question. Yeah. So I would say this is a multi-coursed experience.
Okay.
But I find myself continually drawn to Korean flavors.
Okay.
So I would say I would love to just do a Korean barbecue with all the great meats from Black Angus to A5. With all the pickled veggies and all the accoutrement and all the sauces and all the everything with a pint of Guinness. I really, that's something that has kind of always been at my heart there. So again, you know, being able to represent this brand now is really special. But I close the evening, you know, after we've had those courses and all that, all this beautiful grilled beef, I think where it lands is a really nice glass of champagne.
Okay.
Just the champagne, just on its own, just being able to enjoy the moment. And then I want a glass of Irish whiskey.
Okay.
I'm not going to say which one, but there is a 27-year-old Irish whiskey that is my absolute favorite. And I would have that, and I would probably be listening to, I think it's the Rat Pack. I think I'm listening to Sammy just kind of talk about Bojangles. And,
wow, that's so cool.
And just kind of chill, and hopefully it's a gracious falling asleep. But I think, you know, just it's sort of a perfect balanced moment of just, you know, sitting in this beautiful, comfy leather chair and just being able to enjoy, you know, big band sort of Sinatra style music. But it's fun, and it's there's so much charisma that goes with it, and there's a generosity of the moment
right on.
That is giving.
Okay. Well, St. Patrick's Day is around the corner. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do for St. Patrick's Day?
Man, we've got a lot coming up. We've got so many things going on across the United States. There's a couple of really big parades that go throughout the U.S.,
sure.
Not just New York.
Yep.
So we're going to be doing those. We've got a couple of breweries in the United States, the Open Gate Breweries. One is in Baltimore, and we opened one in Chicago a couple of months ago.
Very cool.
Which are doing really well. So we've got big bashes going on there. As you can imagine, Chicago does the River Dying,
yep.
So a lot of our team is going to be there to support that one. I'm going to be kind of bopping around. I'm going to Philly this weekend for their parade. Really excited to go and support them. Philadelphia is such an incredible city, and
it's
they
cool
have
city, yeah.
really great pints, and it's such a great party. And then I get to spend some time in New York where Guinness and Diageo will be ringing the bell on Wall Street on Friday to close
nice.
The markets, which we're really excited about. And then Sunday, I'm going down to DC for an event. So we're moving nonstop until the very end.
Right,
but we're visiting pints. We're visiting a lot of pubs, having some great pints, both zero and draft and extra stout and everything in between. And we're going to be supporting all those great places that have supported us throughout the year.
Cool. And I want people to be able to get a hold of you. And what's the Instagram and to follow you and Guinness?
Thank you very much. So my Instagram is Guinness in the City.
Easy.
Yeah. Easy. Reach out. Follow me, please.
Oh, cool. Zach, thank you for being on. Such a treat. I love Guinness, and happy early St. Pat's.
Wow. Thank you very much. Thanks so much for having me, and have a great and safe Paddy's to you as well, and all of yours and all your family.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to check us out at dotjpodcast.com. Until then, I'll see you at the bar.